Hello, everybody. This is Dr. David Banner again, doing another podcast. This is on the chapter called A Return to Oneness. So let me start off with a little quote from Marianne Williamson. "Your playing small doesn't serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do." We hear this term oneness a lot these days. And what does it really mean? It means that life is interconnected in one large whole. So you're part of what David Bohm called the implicate order. That there is an order to life. Life is all connected. And you're not separate, even though it seems like you are. In The Course in Miracles, for those people who have studied that, you can understand that the reason why it looks like you're separate is because you have a body. In other words, it appears as though you're over here and everything else is over there. So it's a very, very interesting illusion. But the truth is, everything is connected to everything else. And it's all part of one organic whole in the entire cosmos. Now, we talked a little bit earlier about the divine design, that the cosmos knows exactly what it's doing, that life knows exactly what it's doing, and that when you cooperate with life, things work out well. When you let your ego run things, stuff doesn't work out so well. So that we've already discussed that in other podcasts. So what is oneness? Well, oneness is life knows what it's doing at every moment. If you surrender to the knowing that life knows and let the egoic identity recede in your consciousness, you will find yourself in perfect resonance with the current of life that's moving everything. This is the butterfly effect that's talked about by quantum physicists. In other words, a butterfly flaps their wings and all around the planet, things are changed. Well, that's true. Rupert Sheldrake, a radical biologist, wrote a book called A New Science of Life, in where he talks about morphogenetic fields. And he's done research about, for example, monkeys in Polynesian islands. They used to drop bananas from helicopters to these monkeys. And some of the monkeys in one of these islands started washing their bananas before they ate them to get sand out of their mouths. And when a significant number of these monkeys began to wash their fruit before they ate them, what they discovered was that on neighboring islands, monkeys started doing the same thing. So apparently there's a field within a particular species, let's say human in this case, where if enough people start doing something differently, everybody will start doing it differently. It's called the 100th monkey phenomenon. You've probably heard of it. So we have this grand magician's trick of the ego, which says, I am separate and all of you people are out there. And so from this separatist paradigm, you can see how easy it is to adopt a greedy perspective, a fearful perspective. I've got to get mine because everybody's trying to get theirs. And, you know, this produces myriad problems for us, as you can see. ego is actually a false identity. It's something we made up. It's made up by the mind. And what it does through pretending to be separate is it creates a fear-based reality where you assume you have to duck and dive and manipulate to get what you want in life, rather than just allowing life to come to you. A theme of this book, Loving It All, simply implies that anything that comes to you is brought to you by the current of life. And so a smart thing for you to do is accept and love it all. This is a good strategy, even with the things that you think are not very pleasant. It's a way out of the ego's trap. Why is the ego an illusion? Well, apparently, millennia ago, we humans decided to live as God. In other words, to live by creating our own reality with our own will and our own motivation, instead of just allowing for life to run our lives. Wasn't a very good decision, but here we are. Now, you probably noticed that the ego wants to resist anything that comes to it because it thinks it can do it better. Things it judges as good, it can make them even better. Things that it judges as bad, he wants to resist and change. Okay, that's just the nature of the ego. It takes a lot of psychic energy to resist reality. And this is why we need sleep at night, because we use up a lot of energy just resisting what is, instead of accepting and loving what is. We resist it. We want it to be different. Okay. One way to weaken the ego is to love it all. And that's why this book is important. If you can learn to love it all, you can begin to develop a resonance with the current of life and begin to cooperate with what life is doing rather than what your fear-based ego is telling you. See, the ego is based on the past. I talked about this in an earlier podcast. It's based on learnings from the past, things that you felt were good, things that you felt were bad. That's because we ate from the knowledge of the tree of good and evil, which is a metaphor discussed in the Bible. The knowledge of good and evil simply means the ego begins to define things as good and define other things as bad. And it wants the things that are good, but it doesn't want the things that are bad. And herein lies our dilemma. Now, how do we get out of this? Well, one of the ways, and I talked about it earlier, is to start meditating. Beginning to develop some heart resonance with your mind. See, the mind by itself doesn't know anything. It's just creating a reality. It's a mind-made world, is one way to look at it. It's creating a reality based on the past, what it's learned in the past. I told you about the experiment I did with my students, holding up a pen, asking them what this is. And they all said, oh, it's a pen, Dr. Banner. Well, no, it's not a pen. It's a vibratory field, which we have labeled pen, so that when a pen is held up, our mind says, that's a pen. But it's really just vibration. Everything is just vibration. So it doesn't have to be this way. What you can do is start to resonate with your heart. There's a wonderful program called Heart Math Institute, where you develop the awareness of your heart's mind. So if you can combine the heart with the mind, you've got a pretty powerful tool. But the mind by itself doesn't really know anything. So oneness in the heart. If you can stay in your heart, for example, I took a training called Avatar many, many years ago. And they have this wonderful process called feelings. And what you do, you begin to look at, for example, a tree. And you enter the tree with your consciousness, you feel it with your heart, and you begin to feel what it feels like to be a tree. Now, this sounds silly, I know, but you can actually do this. And you can do this with an animal or anybody, any other thing. You can actually feel what it feels like to be that entity instead of your human entity. Well, what this is evidence that we're all connected to everything else. So if you can feel what it feels like, for example, to be a seagull, and you can feel what it feels like to have wind under your wings, then you can obviously feel like, hey, I'm connected to everything. I had this experience once doing the Avatar training where I was sitting on a bench and I began to look out at the field and I began to see that I was intimately connected to all of life. Now, this alternative reality, we could call it, the interconnected with everything reality, can be induced with shamanic practice, hallucinogenic drugs, and also deep meditation and yogic practice. None of these are going to give you a permanent state of oneness, probably. There are some people that move into oneness. One is Ajahn Chah, who's one of my teachers, Eckhart Tolle, Byron Katie. These are a few of the people that have experienced oneness. But it's often a long process as you begin to connect more and more with the essential nature of your heart and how your heart is connected with everything else. If you can surrender, and this is what Byron Katie and Eckhart Tolle did, they got so miserable in their egoic minds that they just had a breakthrough and they began to see that the ego was not reality, that the ego was showing them an illusory reality. And suddenly they just broke through to this experience of oneness. For you and I, this is not likely to happen. Oh, it could. Anything you can do to give yourself the get yourself out of the illusion of separateness is good. In my book, Frame Shifting, which I mentioned to you earlier, I had an experience of oneness that was actually quite frightening. I'll tell you what happened. My then wife invited me to a party with some of her friends, and they were all smoking marijuana. Well, at this point, I was on my path to be a millionaire with a large consulting firm in Houston, Texas, had three-piece suits and wingtip shoes. You get the picture. So I went to this party, and there were 10 marijuana joints rolled up on a coffee table. Well, the four of us that were in the room smoked the first, I think it was three joints, and they're all on the floor laughing and giggling. I don't feel anything. So I smoke the other seven joints myself. Well, you can imagine what happened. I came onto this powerful, powerful drug. This was Hawaiian ganj, for those of you that remember. Pretty powerful stuff. So I began to experience myself as being dragged towards an abyss. And because my ego was still there, it pulled me back from the abyss. And then I started going toward the abyss again, and my ego pulled me back. And after 12 hours of this, I finally woke up to, quote, ordinary reality. But this changed me dramatically. And what I now know is that I had a very brief experience, if I had accepted it, of going into oneness. This is what Tolle and Byron Katie had. They disappeared out of their ego into the one, into the void, so to speak. Ajahn Chah talks about this. This is the I got it, I lost it experience. And you can think about breaking out of separation this way. There's a gravitational field to it. And so if you can rise up enough out of the gravitational grip of the separateness paradigm, you can return to oneness. But it's takes quite something of psychic energy for you to get there. Once you get to a certain altitude or a higher vibrational level, you can avoid this higher, or this I got it, I lost it phenomenon. But for most of us, what will happen is we'll have an experience of oneness through meditation or drugs or something. and we'll fall back into ordinary egoic reality. One of the Enneagram types that can have an experience of oneness is the type one, the perfectionist. They have a doorway there. They can see, if they're evolved ones, that everything that exists has a fundamental rightness to it. That everything that has occurred is correct and perfect. But spiritually immature ones only see error and that things are not right, and they beat themselves up and other people. Okay. As an Enneagram type 7, I have a difficult time being around ones. I have very few perfectionist tendencies in myself, unless I get stressed and then I become critical and judgmental. So watching ones do their perfectionistic dance can bring out a lot of compassion and empathy in me, because I can see my tendency to do the same thing under stress. Oneness is the true reality, and the separated state is a mirage. It's a mirage, but it's a convincing mirage. Practice living in your heart. Practice living in the present moment. Practice mindfulness. Practice feeling the grace of your heart. Practice feeling the current of life coursing through you and connecting you to all life forms. Practice meditation and experience the deep peace that results from that. If you continue to depend solely on your physical senses for your definition of reality, you're going to be stuck in this three-dimensional trance of the egoic state. So what I'm suggesting here is we are multidimensional beings. We all can experience the truth of oneness, but it takes a little work. You can do it through practicing meditation, staying in the present moment, all the things I've recommended to you. Do some of the Heart Math Institute's work. They're very good in opening your heart. My son, Earl, in England, is a type 5, which, as I mentioned before, the people that have very, very strong mental capacity but tend to protect their heart. He's done a Sufi meditation for years, which is based on opening the heart, and it has done wonders for him. He's a very loving father and a loving husband, and he's now gotten to the point where he actually doesn't have to be by himself so much. So there are changes that we can make. We're going to stay a type whatever we are, but we can modify our type and evolve within the type. So this is what you want to do. So maybe this is enough for this particular one. So I will go to the next podcast. Thanks very much. Thank you.